Rabbi Yisachar Katz, could you please introduce yourself for us?
My name is Yisachar Katz, as you correctly pronounced it. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes I'll have to spend a few minutes convincing people that my name is not Yisachar, but Yisachar. I am the Talmud teacher at Yeshivat Chovevei Torah. Yeshivat Chovevei Torah is a rabbinical school in New York, technically in Riverdale, Bronx. I am the chair of the Talmud department at the yeshiva. I also have another responsibility at the yeshiva. I'm the director of the Lindenbaum Center for the Study of Halakha. And finally, I also have a shul in Brooklyn. I'm the part-time rabbi of a shul in Brooklyn in Prospect Heights. Some people might be more familiar with Crown Heights, and this is really the community over next to Crown Heights, and the name of the shul is Prospect Heights Shul.
You sound very busy.
Kind of, yes.
Could you explain maybe for our listeners a little bit what is modern orthodoxy? What does it stand for?
Sure. Broadly speaking, and of course these are generalizations, in the Orthodox community all over the world, outside of Israel, the Israel scene is a little bit different, so that's a whole different mm-hmm. conversation, but outside of the Israeli scene, the Orthodox community is divided into two parts. One part which is normally referred to as ultra-Orthodoxy, also more commonly referred to as Haredim, and then there is other part of the community, which is normally referred to as modern orthodoxy. The difference between the two is simply that ultra-orthodoxy is what it sounds like, ultra-orthodoxy in a sense. They're committed to halakha, and halakha for them is immutable, non-changeable. Modern orthodoxy believes that halakha and orthodoxy have something to talk about. There's something that they can discuss and gain from a conversation with one another. So, broadly speaking, modern orthodoxy means that it's orthodoxy that believes modernity has something important to offer.
So, maybe you can explain to us, I would assume that the halakha is the halakha. Everybody follows the same halakha. How can then it differ? Is it a rigid thing or a flexible thing?
Right. In typical rabbinic form, I'll answer your question by saying yes and no. It is rigid and it isn't rigid. And in a nutshell, that's the challenge of modern orthodoxy. And let me explain to you what I mean by that. There are certainly areas in halakha that are rigid and inflexible and will never change. But there are also areas that halakha can be somewhat accommodating. And to give you a very concrete example is the issue of women's equality in halakha. That's probably one of the biggest issues today in orthodoxy, the biggest debates. Orthodoxy traditionally had a very strong hierarchical setup. Men are included in most things or almost everything. Women are excluded. And for the last several years, quite a few years, modern orthodoxy has been re-examining those assumptions and trying to figure out to what degree is it correct? To what degree are women excluded from halachically and to what degree not? And the answer, like I said, is yes and no. There are areas where women are going to be excluded from halacha forever. So for example, as I like to use the example, the question of whether women can testify in a halachic beit din. The answer is unfortunately no. Halacha prohibits it. It's based on a text in the Torah. It will never change. I don't like it. It bothers me. I have a very smart mom. I have three very intelligent sisters. And to think that they can't testify in court just because they're the wrong gender is sad, but that's a reality. And I live with them. Orthodox. I'm committed. But there are also things in halacha that women were excluded from, but it turns out that they were wrongly excluded. And the example I like to give is women and studying Talmud. 60, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, people thought that women could not learn Talmud because the Talmud says explicitly women shouldn't study Talmud. Modern Orthodox rabbis went back to the Talmud, looked at the text, and realized that there are times when the Talmud prohibits something because of a sociological reality that eventually could change. So the sociological reasons why women were prohibited from studying Talmud no longer applies, and therefore, outside of the ultra-Orthodox world, every modern Orthodox rabbi would say, of course, not only could women learn Torah, Talmud, they have to learn Talmud.
Are you a posek? Do you have the authority to rule on a posek?
Yeah, so I got smicha. I actually got smicha at a very young age in the Satmar community. I grew up in the Satmar community, the ultra-Orthodox community, and I have to admit that oftentimes I go to bed thinking, what would happen if those who gave me smicha knew my psakim, the Ames Rabbi would not approve from with a lot of them.
Can you give us an example of one of your psakim?
Yeah, so I actually have published several psakim on contemporary issues. If anybody in the audience is interested, they can look it up at the yeshiva website, yctorah.org, yctorah.org. And I've written on a couple of contemporary issues. I have written on the question of whether nursing mothers can feed their babies in shul. And that's an issue that came up in my shul, because my shul caters primarily to a very young audience, their young families, and young mothers who recently gave birth were wondering if the fact that they had a baby means that they cannot participate in shul life for a long time. I also wrote a tshuva on whether women can get an aliyah to the Torah. I'll not tell you how the movie ends, so people can look it up and find out what I say. But yeah, I've written tshuvot. I also written a tshuva on an important issue in the American scene. I don't know if your audience followed the story, but about 2 years ago, a terrible story broke in America where it turns out that a rabbi who was very popular among converts and did a lot of conversions sadly installed a camera in the mikveh and basically was peeping in on women who were dunking in the mikveh. And that raised the whole question about what are the different options when it comes to tefillah or dunking for conversion, and I wrote on that as well.
When you come with a psak, people can choose to follow it or not? Is it binding?
Well, it's binding for those who decide to make my psak binding, as oxymoronic and as circular it sounds. I mean, we live in the 21st century.
I also want to ask you, you mentioned before that you grew up in the ultra-Orthodox community. Mm-hmm. Now you are a rabbi of the modern orthodoxy. Can you explain to us how that move came about?
Sure. I grew up in the ultra-Orthodox community, as you correctly mentioned. I grew up in the Satmar community, which is a Haredi community, primarily in Williamsburg, and I now no longer identify as ultra-Orthodox, but I hope I'm not disappointing your audience that I don't have a tragic story. I didn't leave because the community failed me. I didn't leave because I came from an unhappy home. As a matter of fact, I came from a very loving, warm home. As a matter of fact, I'm in the middle of the avelut for my dad. My dad passed away 6 months ago, and my dad loved my mom the day he died as much as he loved the day he met her. It was a very warm and loving home. You know, to use a cliche, sometimes you're married to someone and you grow apart. For me, it was ideological. I just realized gradually. It didn't happen overnight. It happened over the course of many, many years. I just realized that philosophically I'm no longer in the same place where the community is, and I felt that I no longer fit in. Just to tell you briefly, I'm sure many in the audience know this, it's not a simple process. It's a very frightening process. You all of a sudden realize that the world you knew, the community you knew, the friends you had, no longer are where you are, and you're terrified to leave. It's frightening. It's scary, but thank God for me, it worked out very nicely. I found an alternative community in the modern Orthodox community, and it's been a very enriching and very rewarding
life. How did the family react to that?
Again, I hope I don't disappoint anybody. Beautifully. Kol hakavod to them. It's really their credit that they were able to embrace that. If you will allow me a minute to talk about my dad, Zichrono Livracha, who I think about. I always marvel at my dad. My parents are very different, like a lot of people's parents, in the sense that my mom is an intellectual. My mom sees the world through an intellectual lens. My father's Honorah was not. He was a, what they call a pashatayid, a plain person who was frum and devoted and devout. And it bothered him a lot of the things that I did. A lot of the things that my wife and I did bothered him terribly. And he thought that it was halakhically problematic, but it didn't matter. What mattered was his family. And he was loving, he was embracing, he was supportive. And I think what's so admirable is the fact that it wasn't an intellectual process. I think it was easier for my mom to support and accept us because she's an intellectual, she can think it through. He couldn't think it through, but his kishka told him, I'm going to love my family no matter what. So.
Thank you so much, Yishar Koach, Rabbi Katz.
Thank you.
I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you. And I wish you a continued nice stay in Sydney. Thank you so much.